This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who with it now?
What's up, Houston? Welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Cam, you all right? You look confused over here. This is an interesting start to the show. Just spit on that thing. Let's get it going. Come on. Let's go. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome into the bullpen. I'm glad we all found microphones to use. I am Brian McDonald, found on X, at Side by BMAC. The man without a microphone is at Cam Smith, found on X, at Clutch City Cam. Sean Mapes from Half the Shows on the Station, as I like to say, can be found on the X at Sean A. Mapes. And our man behind the board today hitting the drops, and there's definitely going to be a couple of those drops hit today, is Johnny Bellmer, found on the X at Third Coast Johnny. So Astros won a baseball game yesterday, gentlemen, and they did so in an unusual fashion, in so much as they actually scored a lot of runs. So many runs that it was the most runs they've scored this season against probably the best team in baseball. I don't know if they have the best record. I haven't looked at the standings in a few days. But
I don't think they do. I think the Yankees.
Do they? I mean, they just crushed the Yankees, though. So I think I'd be willing to give Orioles best team in baseball.
No, technically they're ranked above the Yankees because they have two. At the time, they had two less losses.
Two less losses? Yeah. Okay. Either way, it's a damn good baseball team. And the Astros took it to them on, through the bats, obviously. Got a little dicey there with the pitching. Also giving up 11 runs. The bullpen certainly fell apart. You had another pitching injury. Hooray. But the bats got it done. And, man, I don't know where you want to start with this offensive performance. They scored 9 runs in the sixth inning. Sixth inning, 9 runs. Nice. And hit 5 doubles in there. Joey Loperfido and Jose Altuve both have 2 doubles and 3 hits apiece. Alex Bregman was good again. And let's actually start there because we've spent, I think, the better part of the first couple months of the Astros season, like, you know, just kind of lamenting the fact that Alex Bregman's fallen apart. It's his last season here. Now he's got no trade value and he's not doing anything for you. But when you look at what Alex Bregman has done recently, he's basically now, fell into the start of the season, then getting hot towards the middle of the season that he does every single year. So Bregman really sneakily rebounding into form. Since Bregman's average hit 189 after their May 8th game against the Yankees, Bregman since May, from May 9th forward, is hitting 299 with an 876 OPS. You'd obviously take both of those. Those are damn near elite. 299 certainly elite. 876 is pretty close to elite. With 162 game pace of 33 home runs and 96 RBI. I mean, 299, 33 home runs, 96 RBI. Sounds like basically Alex Bregman. So, Sean, were we overreacting to the early season slump from Bregman? It was this more severe slump than we're used to seeing from Bregman, but he's right back and hitting Alex Bregman form.
Yeah, it was. I think that was what was most alarming, and the fact that it was normally when he comes out slow, the Astros aren't a million games back in the division in the early part of the season.
Right, right.
So
they can withstand it. Yeah.
It was even more, it stood out even more because it was a down year for the Astros as a whole. So him coming back, I mean, especially with this Tucker injury that was supposed to be like 3 days and now it's been 2 weeks. You need all the help you can get, and they got it from, like you said, Altuve, Loperfido, but Bregman's really been pushing it, or pulling his weight here the last couple weeks.
I don't think it was an overreaction. I get that he does this every season, but I think that's kind of my point at the same time, too, is like, yeah. I'm over the, oh, he starts like this every year. Okay, well, like, you've been in the league for 8 years now. Yeah. Like,
just, can we mix it up a little?
Can you, yeah, can you just be consistent?
Just because you always do it doesn't mean it's okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. And even more so, it did stand out because the team was struggling, but it's just like, okay, this is when the team needs you. Like, you don't have any more exceptions to start off slow, like, especially this year. So I'm happy that he's picked up the pace, but I honestly don't know if I'm even believing that he's going to keep up with it. Like, there's just, I feel like there's just something off this year with him.
I mean, it's hard to nitpick what he's done. I mean, again, like the stats that I mentioned, hitting .299 with an .876 OPS since May 9th. Maybe he drops off. I just think he's going to be, and it's. I mean, obviously, he's going to have a great legacy here in Houston as one of the five guys to win two World Series titles with the team. But it's going to be a complicated history at times because he had the highest of highs in 2018 and 2019. 2019, he hits 40-plus home runs, finished the second in the MVP voting to, I believe, Mike Trout. And then he has a long stretch, 2020, 2021, where the offensive numbers went way down. And the last 2 years, 2023 and this year, he's rebounded, once it hit late May, early June. But you spend the first 2 months of the season like, God, this guy is not only is he not hitting well, he's dragging the team down, not to Jose Abreu levels, but he was arguably through the first month the second worst. If it wasn't for Jose Abreu, Alex Bregman would have been the worst offensive player on the team through like the first month. So it's a complicated legacy with Bregman.
I mean, we saw it when Abreu got sent to Florida for 3 weeks. Who became the pinata? It was Alex Bregman kind of became the pinata for Astros fans' frustrations with the team. Because, like I said, unlike every other year when Bregman starts off slow, the entire team started off slow this time around. So that mixed with the fact that it was a contract year, and I think a lot of expectations, I know at least for the shows that I work on, the expectation was, well, if it's going to be a contract year for Bregman, if any time he was going to come out swinging, or I guess swinging well, if he was going to come
he
out.
He did swing.
He swung.
He came out swinging and missing.
It was popping up.
Yeah, that too.
If there's any season he was going to come out the gates red hot, it was going to be contract year Alex Bregman, insulted by the offers that have been made by the Astros. And instead, it was not even same old, it was worse than before. And you add in the fact that this was his age 30 season too. So at a certain point, you do think, well, there is going to be a drop, or not a drop off, but a tail off in his production coming. And if he couldn't get it right this year, it might never come back. So it is nice that, again, he has proved the haters and doubters wrong, at least temporarily.
Well, and I think another thing to look at too is, like, at least in the past, you've been able to count on him to have a really good walk to strikeout ratio. Like, in years before, he's always had more walks than strikeouts and a good on base percentage. This year, it is the complete opposite. Like, his on base percentage, I think, is what, 311, and he has 20 more strikeouts than he has walks. So, like,
a 311 on base percentage is really low for Alex Bregman.
You can look at his numbers and tell that he's still digging himself out of the hole that he put himself into.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So another guy hitting well, I mentioned him at the top, Joey Loperfido, same as Altuve, both had three hits last night, including two doubles. Joey Loperfido, he was hitting well before the Astros sent him down. He comes back up, first game yesterday, three hits, two doubles. He's an absolute machine right now. His average now up to .372, which...
Is that good?
It's good. I mean, I say it just to point out how well he's been hitting. Obviously,
Gwynn. What do you want?
Yeah, he's Kirby Puckett.
He's Tony Gwynn with more
Ted
pop.
The only thing different between him and Ted Williams is Joey Loperfido still has his head. But I don't expect him. What, too soon? No.
Yes.
Soon? Okay. Oh, my bad. All right. My bad. No, it's a little disrespectful to the estate of Ted Williams. Look, he doesn't have a head. It's frozen. But Joey Loperfido obviously not going to hit .372. I don't even think he necessarily would hit .272 over the long term. I mean, when you look at his minor league track record, he's more like a guy that will probably, I think, best case scenario, hit .250 to .260, but give you great power. But the question really becomes, now that he's back up, I hope that he's up for the rest of the season. He doesn't continue to yo-yo back and forth between Houston and Sugarland. But where do you play him? Because, I mean, he could play the outfield. We think he could play first base, although the Astros don't seem to really want him to, though he did at Duke in college, and he has some in the minors. But, like, what would be your plan going forward, Sean, with how to find at-bats for Joey Lupo-Fido? Like, how are you mix and matching where he plays, who he's taking time from to make sure his bat's in the lineup?
I mean, he could take all the time in the world from Chaz McCormick. I'll be fine.
Yeah, that's a good start.
Easy answer. Yeah. You can put him in center. I would like to see it on the major league level of him in center and Myers.
He's played some center in the minor leagues.
No, but I would just like to see it in, like, before I say he can just, throw him in center.
Right. Yeah, before you make him the everyday.
Yes,
sure.
Yes. Yeah. But I don't see why there's a reason he can't be, if not every day, then of the vast majority of days in left. I mean, he made a great play last night. I think it was to get the first out of the game. In left field. So I think that's a good spot for him. Put Yordan at DH I don't want to say the majority of the time, but a good amount of the time, probably the majority.
Either him or Diaz. Yeah, Yordan start like once a week in left field. Like exactly. Basically the Fromber start when there's not going to be any fly balls, and then just, the rest of the time he's DH. Yeah,
just to stay out there, probably more home games than road games. You know, you can be smart about it.
Right.
But yeah, I think I'm ready to stamp Joey Lupo-Fido as an everyday player for the Astros. I don't think there's enough production from the other Astros to keep him out of the lineup credibly. And with how the Astros are this season, I'm okay taking more of not a straight up youth movement, but a pivot to, all right, let's see what Joey's got, because they're already, are they 7 games back?
They're 7 games back in the division, 5, I believe 5 in the wild card.
So I'm okay with it being a more of a youth movement as far as, at the very least, left field. Like, again, Chaz McCormick, love the catch in the 22 World Series.
Tip the hat.
Yeah, my heart will go on.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Look, and if you can say the hell with it and play Dubon at first base, I don't see why...
Yeah.
Can't put Lupo-Fido at first base.
Are you putting some disrespect on my man Mauricio Dubon?
No, I love Mauricio. Like, I love him, but he was never ever played first base, and they put him at first base, and Lupo-Fido has actually played first base, so why could you not put him at first base?
I think he literally played 4 games of first base. I think they're all last year before this season.
Lupo-Fido?
No.
Oh, Dubon?
Dubon.
Yeah.
In his entire career, he played 4 games of first base. And then now it's
well, it couldn't be. It can't be any worse.
Now we're just penciling him in as the first baseman most nights.
And I think that's part of the answer is, like, because Dubon's played so well, I kind of almost want to switch the idea of Dubon's the super utility player. This might sound a little crazy, but Dubon's the super utility player where he's just in the lineup every day. Because he swings at everything. He strikes out a lot. But no one, I think, has better just put the bat on the ball contact skills than Dubon.
And you see it with the runners in scoring
position. Right. So I want him in the lineup every single day. And now Lupo-Fido basically comes at you super utility where maybe twice a week he's starting at first base because John Singleton doesn't deserve to start every single day.
Yes. Singleton and McCormick do not factor whatsoever into my Lupo-Fido.
Exactly.
Lupo-Fido over both those guys.
So maybe Lupo-Fido starting twice a week at first base for Singleton, maybe starting twice in a week in center field for when Jake needs a day off or whatever. He's starting in left, and then if Yordan needs to play left because Fromber's on the hill and they're at home, then maybe Lupo-Fido can DH, and you find your way into five or six starts a week through with Lupo-Fido now becoming kind of the super utility.
Yeah, and even when Tucker comes back, you don't want to rush Tucker back into the outfield. Like, that deep bruise, I would be okay with Tucker DHing too at time because I don't want him to aggravate that leg anymore, which would give Lupo-Fido and Dubon more playing time in the outfield too.
Yeah.
So one more thing quickly before we get to break. It's more just a note, and it's just kind of a throw-your-hands-up WTF moment. But the Astros call up Jake Bloss for his major league debut yesterday. Yeah.
Bloss Hogg.
Bloss Hogg, yeah. Like a Bloss. I think we have the Slim Thug song in there we could play at some point. Anyway, so he gets called up. He was a third-round pick this year. I know he completely skipped Triple A. I think did he skip Double A also?
No, he played for the Hawks.
Oh, that's right. He had no hitter at Double A. That's right. But he did skip Triple A. He comes up. He's facing one of the best lineups in all of baseball. And because he's an Astros pitcher, he's hurt already. He's got shoulder discomfort, as every Astro player from this era seems to have at some point. Hey, discomfort.
Hey, they said he wanted to keep pitching, so.
Yeah, well, I mean.
It's not that big of an injury.
Sure. I mean, you trust anything the Astros tell you? I mean, they told you Javier slept wrong and hurt his neck. 3 weeks later, he's having Tommy John. Yeah. Somehow the neck bone is connected to the UCL. Tucker, I don't get that.
Tucker was going to be out like 3 days.
Right? 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, obviously.
It's just like, come on, man.
It's a when it rains, it pours situation. I thought Blas was fine when you consider the fact that.
Right. You consider who's going
to
first
start, yeah. Never pitched in AAA. Playing, I'm going to crown him the best lineup in baseball.
Certainly Gunnar Henderson, man. You can't get him
Jesus.
Out. Jesus. What a MVP right now, I think, and I would have to say.
And so all those factors, I liked what I saw out of Blas. I just wish he could have walked out
with
both
anyone could
shoulders.
Stay healthy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who? That's, man.
I mean, he arguably had the best start of a rookie pitcher this year when you compare Arrighetti and all these other guys. I mean,
well,
I know
Arrighetti
only
had a few good starts.
I'm talking about first start.
Oh, debut. Oh, debut. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he only went
he got Hindley
innings, but
yeah, well, everybody got Hindley. Hindley got one out.
Check.
All right, we got to go to break.
One and done.
On the other side, when we get back here on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Great win yesterday, but I still think we have to talk about and discuss the looming what-if scenario for the Houston Astros as we get into July and closer to the All-Star break. Should they sell? That question when we turn to the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, Houston. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, talking Astros here. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call or text our HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. But we spent last segment talking about, obviously, the fun and the good from last night and the big win over the Orioles. But I still think, as we mentioned in the last segment, you're five back in the wild card with multiple teams ahead of you. And then, of course, seven back in the wild or in the division race. I still think you have to consider the looming threat of being forced into being sellers as we're getting now close to July, about a week away, and the trade deadline will then obviously be coming up about a month later. Look, seven back in the West, I know people will point to 2005, like, well, the Astros threw the first 70 games or whatever, same as the 2000.
That's true.
It's true. I just think when you look at this team, and hell, we just closed the last segment talking about it with all the injuries they've had to their pitching staff. You can point to, well, it's happened before, they can do it again, that's fine, but what are you relying on? Are you relying on guys like Verlander, who are 41 and can't stay healthy? Fromber, who you have no idea what he's going to do from start to start? You got rookies coming up like Jake Blas, Spencer Arrighetti, you have no idea where you're going to get from him start to start. Oh, we're getting Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers Jr. back? What can you possibly expect from a guy that's hurt as often as Lance McCullers and someone coming back from Tommy John like Luis Garcia?
Cy Ronell.
Cy Ronell. Yeah. You got like one guy you could pencil in like, good start.
Yeah.
And it's the 30-year-old who's never done it before. That's what you can pencil in. And then on the offensive side, I mean, we've seen obviously they bounced back huge last night, 14 runs against the Orioles. But this team is, for every game like that, you see them get shut out by, was it Jonathan Cannon from the White Sox who threw like a two-hitter against them? They have this up-and-down Jekyll and Hyde nature where they get just completely shut out by these terrible pitchers like Jonathan Cannon. There's been a few more recently where that shut them down. And then they hit like Garrett Crochet. They hit Grayson Rodriguez. I'm forgetting the guy before the Tigers. They hit the Tarek Skubal.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Who's having like a Cy
Young
season.
Yeah, Tarek Skubal's, you know, top contender for the Cy Young. Garrett Crochet has been great. Obviously, Grayson Rodriguez was a former top overall prospect and been pretty good as well. And then they get shut down by Jonathan Cannon. So I don't think you can really trust this offense to carry them either. And it's we're getting to the point where, like, because this often comes up when especially on my show, The Killer Bees, where it's like, what is it going to take for you to get back in on the Astros? It's like, well, just one series. Well, you're kind of getting to the point where that's not really good enough.
Was like, that Jeremy Branham?
That was actually Joel. Okay. That was actually Joel.
What would it take for you to
Yeah. I guess that because of the setup, it was more Jeremy, but it was more Joel's train of thought. Mm-hmm. Anyway, like, you're getting to the point where just winning a series is not good enough because you're so far back, and we can't ignore, like, we're now kind of having a deja vu with this comeback. We did this in May, where I believe it was May 26th. They got to within like four games, whatever. But it was after a 12-game stretch where we had 9 games against the Angels and A's. Yeah. Okay, cool. Now the Astros are roaring back. They're I believe only 4 games under 500. They're within 5 in the wild card. But when you look at who they played, you know, it's the Cardinals, it's the Tigers who are mediocre, it's the White Sox. We're getting kind of fooled into the same scenario. When you look ahead in July, you got the Dodgers, you got the Mariners, you got the Rangers, you're at the Twins, you're at the Blue Jays, who aren't great, but you've got to go into another country for 4 games, so that you can't take anything there as guaranteed. I'm just not ready to say I'm back in. I'm definitely not taking selling off the table. And if I get blown away with an offer for anybody like Bregman or Fromber or Presley, who's not here for the long term, who's only signed for this year or this year next, I'm moving on.
Yeah, I think that's fair with the way they performed this season. I've kind of taken the stance that until they're over 500, like, I'm not going to invest in, and when I say that, I mean like be buyers, like how Dana right. Brown was talking just I think earlier this week.
Seems like every week he says
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean he says it every week, but I think he said it on Wednesday that they're still looking to be buyers at the deadline. Now he did put some stipulations on it. He did say that he wanted to be 5 games back by the goal. Was 5 games back by the end of July. That's where he would make the decision of buying or selling. And I think that's good, but ultimately you do have to be a good team to make the playoffs. Shocking
well,
news.
Wait, hold on, Johnny. I don't know if we can we just rewind the last. No, we
Hot
can't.
Take.
Yeah. Sean, can you just actually repeat that? I don't think Johnny can rewind time, so. Can you just repeat your take there?
Ultimately, you have to.
Put it in reverse!
Ultimately, you have to be a good team to make the playoffs.
Okay. See, that's a problem.
And to be a
good
team.
They haven't been one.
To be a good team, you have to win more games than you lose.
Wow.
That's the very, very bare minimum that I'm asking.
Cam, I don't know if you can refute that. I mean,
no,
Sean's spitting facts over here.
That's very sound logic. Look, I feel like it was weeks ago we talked about, I think you asked us the question, where do the Astros have to be at a certain time for you to be on board with them or like
or
buying or selling? Yes. And I think what I said was if they're not at 500 by June, then I'm selling. And I'm going to stick to that. Like it's June 22nd and we're 4 games below 500. We're injury riddled. So at this point, I'm all for selling. Like I'm never want to be that guy that like gives up on the team. I just do not see this team this year making a playoff push.
Yeah, so
like, there's just too many other good teams in the American League. And not to mention, I just got an alert that Max Scherzer is making his debut with the Rangers
in
2 days.
He is.
So like
yeah,
right now the Rangers are getting healthier. So
yeah. Like I'm willing to obviously let this month play out. It's June 22nd. We can let 8 days pass by. If they let's just go pie in the sky, the most optimistic you could possibly be and say they sweep the Orioles. Then you can't. I don't think we can say sell now. You at least have to be willing to hit the pause button. So like, I think we're going to have to, but I'm willing to let this play out a few more weeks. But I just think again, like we got tricked to this in May. Like I said, when the soft schedule hit, they suddenly climbed back into it, you know, quote unquote. And then the tougher schedule hit, and they fell right back out to like 10 games under. We're doing the same thing again, where the softer schedule hit. What was the? I wish I had the exact. I'll pull it up here in a second.
We played Colorado after Baltimore, so you would think
yeah,
that
Colorado
if they
did, than the Mets.
Yeah, you would think that over the next 8 games.
Okay, here we go.
It's
so
very realistic.
The,
they could get
the teams they're playing right now that they pulled themselves back into it. You had the Cardinals, they suck. Angels, they suck. The Giants are below 500. And you lost that series. You beat the Tigers, they're below 500. White Sox, the worst team in baseball, and you didn't even sweep them. And now you're facing the Orioles. So you pulled yourself back into this, quote-unquote, by facing the dregs of the league. And again, fast forward to next month. Now, as Cam points out, the next 2 series are Rockies and Mets. So if they win this series against the Orioles and then take care of business against the Rockies and Mets, I think a lot of fans are going to be back in. But then you get to July at the Blue Jays, at the Twins. You got the Rangers at the Mariners. You got the Dodgers coming to town. It's going to be tough for me to look, you know, getting into August and see this team as a team that you could realistically look at and go, I'm a buyer. I'm going to add to this team. I'm willing to trade the few prospects they have remaining and add to this team for, you know, to make one last push.
Because at the end of the day, they would just have to be a fundamentally different team than they've proven to be so far this season.
Yeah.
That is what you're asking them to do if you expect them to not just get back right now, but get back and then stay back into this playoff race. Like you said, against all those good teams where the Astros, despite winning last night, they still do not have a good track record against teams that are with a winning record.
Right.
I mean, you can just list off all their wins and you're like, luckily, they don't have a playoff committee for baseball.
the BCS?
Yeah, because I'm not sure how many quality wins.
How many quality wins
the Astros have.
No. And quad one wins? No.
No, I don't think I don't think the RPI is very high.
No, that's not.
I think that, like we said, they've had these stretches of easy games so far, and that's when they've made the most ground up. Logically, that means they will have stretches with hard games coming up that you outline.
It's coming up in July, yeah.
And yeah, you can't really have faith in them getting it together. And so, like you, I'm not in sell now. Right now mode, but I am in wait and see. But my personal expectation is that at the end of the road, when we get to July 30th, you're probably going to be selling.
Yeah,
or at least should be selling.
Now I got to get to this text before we get into some positive here, real quickly.
Okay,
from 0303 talking about Martin Maldonado.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he had a meeting with the Astros players when they were in Chicago, and that motivated them. That's the only reason they scored a season high yesterday. I mean, it's sound logic.
Yeah.
I mean, Maldi got to talk to the Astros for the first time all season, and then they go off and score 14 runs.
Do you think he shook Joey Loperfido's hand, and then Joey Loperfido looked at his hand?
He hasn't washed it since. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah.
There's two doubles in these hands.
You're going to trade for Maldonado to be a consultant?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good luck charm. Yeah, exactly. So quickly, some positive, real quickly, before we go into the break. Hunter Brown has been absolutely fantastic. We talked about it a little bit last week, but last six games, he's got a 170 ERA, 41 strikeouts and 37 innings. And it goes back even further than just the small six-game sample size. Since that blow-up in KC where he gave up like 11 hits and 9 runs in the first inning, his ERA is 338, and that's like 12 starts. It's not, you know, extremely small sample size. More strikeouts than innings pitched in that season as well. And looking at this team going forward, Verlander's 41. He's not staying healthy. Fromber's up and down. I don't want to give that guy a long-term contract as he's hitting 30. Javier's coming off of Tommy John. Lance McCullers, you know, shrug emoji. Jose Urquidy is constantly mid. Ronel Blanco's 30. I don't have any expectation for him to, you know, develop into a long-term ace. I think, combined with what else they have and how well Hunter Brown has been pitching, and it kind of coincides when the pitching coaches, I think it was the sinker that they gave him that they worked on and added to his repertoire. I think you're looking at Hunter Brown realizing his potential as an ace and being the Astros ace next season.
I'm not ready to throw the A word around.
Next season, Sean.
I'm not ready to throw the A word around on Hunter Brown.
A-hole?
No, the A word.
Oh, ace. Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know what. Okay.
You're the one that started the A word talk. No.
I don't know why you're calling ace A word.
Because I don't want to say it. I don't want to say it when
do we have to bleep ace? Johnny, bleep ace.
No. I mean, it has been impressive. It has been encouraging. What we've seen from Hunter Brown, like you said, it's more than just a couple good starts at this point. I still just want
Ace Sean.
Come
with me. Who's coming with me?
Maybe
Cam, you with me? Ace Hunter Brown.
No. Oh,
maybe it's because it. Maybe because it's Houston, the last 7 years of Houston Astros baseball has spoiled us, and the aces have been
Garrett Cole,
Justin Verlander, good Framber Valdez, Zach Greinke. Like,
right.
That's what I think of as an ace. I think Hunter Brown could be a very viable number two.
Or he could be the ace that you got. Every team in the league has a number one starter.
That's true, Sean. That's true. The math literally checks out. Yeah, the math checks out. Team,
and so he could be the Astros' number one starter. I'm not sure. I'm just not sure about Ace and holding him to that standard quite yet. I mean, he can still get there. He has the pedigree you'd expect. But, again, I just want to see a little bit more pelts on the wall.
I think we just have to be willing to accept that not every ace follows the same timeline as every other ace. Because this guy, he was a fifth-round pick, which isn't late, but it's not a first-round pick, like Verlander. He wasn't a first-round pick, so you shouldn't have the same expectations that you would for a first. He's drafted in 2019. Obviously, 2020, the COVID season's completely wiped out. He doesn't get to pitch. And he doesn't make a top 100 prospect team until the preseason for 2023. So he's not following the same expedited path that a lot of the aces have hit. I mean, this is a guy that I think just because, again, we said this last week, you put him side by side with Verlander. Oh, it's baby Verlander. Yeah, he's not on the same timeline as Justin Verlander. I think we have to be willing to accept, yeah, he sucked for the second half of last year, but he's not on the same timeline as every ace. He's different than those guys.
That is fair. I think some of it is coming from the side-by-sides and the overlays with Justin Verlander.
And then
seeing what you got out of him the first month of this season. And
right.
Maybe that's some bias there of just writing him off as like, okay, so really, it's just because he kind of looks like Justin Verlander when he pitches. Now we're calling him Justin Verlander, and he just gave up 7 runs in the first inning. Sweet. Love it. He's definitely been good. He is someone that in the post-Verlander world, and, you know, like you said, Fromber's only signed for next year. In the post-Fromber and Verlander world, it very likely could be the number one starter for the Astros.
All right, call us or text us on the HRMP listener line if you want to get any thoughts in on the Astros, but we are moving on to the Texans next. That listener line, I guess I should give it out. 713-780-3776. That's professional work there. When we get back on the bullpen, we are moving over to the Texans, and I've got a thought on why this year's Houston Texans team is going to be different than teams in the past that were hyped up and ultimately failed. That when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Again, if you want to get in the conversation, call or text the HRMP list. And I'm going to talk Texans here in a second. But give it a call. Text us at 713-780-3776. But first, Sean, your first half Pacific Coast League champions, the Sugarland Space Cowboys, which can be heard 6 days a week on ESPN 92.5. They've got an ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 coming up this next week.
Yes, that's June 27th, Thursday. Come join us at the Space Cowboys game for the aforementioned ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 night. Our listeners can get tickets to the game for just $9.25, 925.
Like
same station that you can hear all Space Cowboys games on. Just enter code ESPN 925. Come watch the future of the Astros with us. See if any of our hosts will embarrass themselves throwing out the first pitch like Brad Kellner did last year. It's going to be Jeremy Brano. I can report this. This is an exclusive. I don't think it's an exclusive. I think we've already talked about it. But the two hosts throwing out the first pitch, Jeremy Branham of the Killer Bees.
Okay.
And Paul Gallant of Gallant and George.
Ooh, okay. So how serious? Okay. You know Paul pretty well, obviously. We haven't worked for him the last, 3 years?
2 years.
2 years?
Don't do that to me.
I didn't age you 19 years like a Cam tried to put on
zero during the break. Don't add another year on that. No.
Paul is a competitive man. He's someone.
Baseball background.
True or false, he's someone known to carry around equipment so that he's ready for a pickup football game at any time.
True.
Respect.
So how seriously is he taking this
first
pitch?
Very seriously.
Is he training?
I don't know about training, but he has brought up his baseball background before and what that means as far as his own expectations for himself and what goals he has when it comes to this first pitch. So I'd expect max effort from Paul.
Okay, you think he's bringing the heat, or is he going to try to? He's going to try to throw a breaking pitch here. Is he? Is he going to shake? Is he going to shake the catcher off? Call his own pitch.
It'll be a fastball, and I don't know if he's going to try to light up the.
I think he's going up and in.
Okay, I don't know if he was going to try to light up the radar gun or not, but
I would like to see him throw a knuckleball.
Okay, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Maybe Branham. Branham seems more like
Branham seems like more like a knuckleballer.
A wily.
Yeah.
I look at Branham.
Is he a crafty lefty?
That's a knuckleball guy.
Is he a crafty lefty?
I don't think he's lefty. Oh, okay. No, but I see him as a knuckleball guy.
Jamie Moyer type.
Hey, those are hard pitches. Rich Hill type.
I was just naming old pitchers who pitched into their 40s. J-Bone, as he likes to call himself, is not even in his 40s yet. Anyway, all right, Texans, that's what we're talking about, Houston Texans. And again, if you have any thoughts, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So I had this thought, I was actually doing yard work yesterday. I don't know why this thought came up to me as I was mowing the yard.
Friday.
Yeah, okay.
Friday
morning? It was like 10 o'clock yesterday.
I'm glad. Thank you for starting at 10.
No, I'm not a guy that gets up at 6 a.m. and mows the yard. Even if I am up, which I am most of the time.
They were jackhammering at our apartment pool, like jackhammering stones outside of my balcony at like 7:30 in the morning.
No, I have I wake up really early most of the time, but I have a rule that I won't start mowing before 9 a.m. just out of courtesy.
Out of respect.
Yeah. Now, actually, 8 a.m. weekdays, because most people... maybe not the people in this room, but most people by 8 a.m. they're already up to go to their 9-to-5 job. But weekend at 9 a.m. Yeah, like I'll sleep in, I'll mow at 9. That's fine.
Okay.
You're a gentleman and a scholar. So
yeah, I try to be.
Okay,
that.
So as you're mowing, referring to
the Houston Texans. No, I just had this thought about. Because I think a lot of people, and I don't know, we talked about, you know, Jason Braddock's comments last week being the lone dissenter about the Texans, and he seemed to be upset that they were talking so much. But there seemed to be, like, whenever the topic comes up, like, okay, if they fail, why do they fail? Like, the popular pushback is, oh, sophomore slump for C.J. Stroud. It's just, to me, kind of lazy narratives. So I started thinking, like, look, I think this is a product of, and Sean, you said it during the break, same old Texans. The people are just stuck on from 2002 through basically last year, you know, not up to the start of last year.
Up until August.
Right, up until August. That whenever you actually think the Texans are going to do something, it's going to be same old Texans. They're going to find a way to disappoint you. But I'm looking at this team and comparing them to the teams that got hyped in the past. I just don't see them as being, you know, comparable. Like when you go, if you go way back, and the hype levels are obviously going to be different comparatively for the expectations at the time. But the Texans going into year three with David Carr, there were some expectations. They progressed each year. People thought they could go, you know, or actually year three, they go 7-9. They disappoint you by not getting to 8-8 in year three. Next year, they followed up 2-14.
Yeah.
They fell flat on their face when you thought this team was about to take the next step, getting to a winning record. Then you fast forward, obviously, to the Matt Schaub era. Obviously, 2011, Matt Schaub gets hurt. You can't really blame him for that. But 2012, they go out to 11-1 record and then just completely crap the bed down the stretch. Don't even get a bye, get knocked out in the second round.
Lose three out of the last four.
Yeah, they're 12-1 finished the year, or 11-1 finished the year, 12-2, yeah. Or 12-4. So they crap out down the stretch, don't get a bye, get their asses kicked by the Patriots in the second round, and follow that up with a 2-14 season the next year in 2013.
That is the most same old Texans.
Right.
Is make the playoffs two straight years, bring back a lot of the same core, and then somehow you're the worst team in the league.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah. So you fast forward, okay, now Bill O'Brien's here, and you're back in the playoffs in 2015. Now it was as a 9-7 team winning the crappy AFC South.
Doesn't matter,
Brian, AFC South champs 2 in a row. But you're starting Brian Hoyer, and you get your ass kicked by the Chiefs 30-0 in the first round of the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so now we get past this era. We got Deshaun Watson. We don't know he's a pervert yet. There's hope. 2018, they get back into the playoffs after coming back from the season where he tore his ACL, where they same old Texans as his ACL. They get into the playoffs in 2018, and the Colts dominate you. I know it was only 21-7 on the scoreboard. That was an ass-kicking.
It was a no-show.
That was an ass-kicking. okay, fast, you know, go for the next year. Hey, they win a playoff game with Deshaun Watson. They beat the Bills. They're up 24-0 on the Chiefs and 51-27, yeah. I think, was the final score, something like that.
The Chiefs came back and were leading at halftime.
Right. They're up 24. They're up 24-0, and then losing a half. Sean, that is an amazing fact.
Only the Texans.
Oh, that's only same old Texans can do that.
And then they trade DeAndre Hopkins.
And they trade DeAndre Hopkins. Next season, they go 4-12, and then obviously we know what happens with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this, and it's a constant trend of, hey, there's reason for hope. There's reason for hope. They're going to take the next step, and they suck again. But when you look at these teams. I mean, think about the names I mentioned. David Carr. Okay, that's a limiting factor. David Carr wasn't very good. Now, you can say whatever you want about his offensive line as far as being a contributing factor to that, but he wasn't very good. Dom Capers, not an elite head coach. You fast forward, Gary Kubiak obviously became a Super Bowl champion when he went to the Broncos, but you got Matt Schaub as your quarterback. Yeah. You know, then Brian Hoyer's your quarterback and Bill O'Brien's your head coach. There's limiting factors there. Deshaun Watson, as good as he was during the time before he became the pervert, he still was the guy that turned over the ball too many times. And Bill O'Brien was still your coach. There's limiting factors all throughout Texans history that are obvious reasons why these hype teams fall short. What's the limiting factor? It's not C.J. Stroud. It's not D'Amico Ryans. I mean, that's why I have more faith in this team actually living up to the hype than these past Texans teams. And we'll obviously have to carry some of this conversation over the other side of the break. But that's why I'm more optimistic this year. Head coach, not a limiting factor. Quarterback, not a limiting factor. I think they pay off on the hype this year, within the next couple years.
Yeah,
They're not going to win a Super Bowl this year. But you know what I'm saying.
I think that this is a, like you laid out so well. I think this is probably the first time that you can feel very confident in the Houston Texans' long-term future. Where even with Deshaun, when they had Deshaun Watson. Their head coach was still Bill O'Brien, who was a fine coach, but I would not say the city of Houston was very behind him as the leader of this football team. And that's what's different about this team is that no one really in the city has anything bad to say about C.J. Stroud or D'Amico Ryans. So that is the situation where even if you think that, hey, they have a decently tough schedule this year. They it's still sophomore season. It's a tough AFC. So even if short term you're not a huge believer, long term you have to think that this team's set up for success, Cam.
I mean, I'm trying to find one thing that could make me think they would regress, and like I mean,
it's not a perfect roster. Left guard's a question. Second corner's a question. Those positions aren't long-term limiting factors for me.
And we can maybe go into that on the other side specifically what could derail this.
Yeah, let's go ahead and carry that over. When we get back here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 on the bullpen, what could hold the Texans back? That when we get back on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 in 3 minutes.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. We're going to continue talking Texans here in a second. If you want to get in on that conversation, you can call or text our HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. But first, I want to tease that next segment, same as we had, I believe, 2 weeks ago, we've got a couple of Sabercats, the 13-1 Houston Sabercats, who have locked up a playoff spot. They've locked up a home game in the playoffs, as you might imagine, with that 13-1 record, and have Dallas coming up. So you got to win that game, even if they've already locked up a playoff spot. But we got a couple of the Sabercats that spoke to Jeremy Branham. We will air that next segment. We have Ezekiel Lindenmuth and Ronan Murphy from the Sabercats promoting both, obviously, they're 13-1. I mean, they got to pat yourselves on the back there a little bit. And their playoff game coming up, the game against Dallas as well, along with their Jeremy asked them about their life as a rugby player, which I mean I'm going to guess it's you ready for this dad joke? Rugged, I'm going to say. grade that, Belmer?
That was a D minus.
Oh, come on. That was amazing.
D minus.
Pat me up, Cam.
I'm not going to.
You're not going back? Oh, man. Okay. So, anyway, so we got a couple Sabercats, Ezekiel Lindenmuth and Ronan Murphy coming up. Spoke with Jeremy Branham. Again, 13-1 Sabercats. Locked up a home playoff game. They got Dallas coming up, so you won't want to miss that interview
team.
Next segment. It's a very rugged interview. Jeremy, very rugged. He's got the
a rugged guy.
He's a rugged guy. He's got the 5 o'clock shadow going on. It's a rugged interview. Not chopped and screwed, but rugged. And of course, Mount Rushmore plus one will come up at 1:30. But we finished off the last segment talking Texans and kind of following up on my assertion that this Texans team will be different than past Texans teams because they don't have the same limiting factors that have classically held them back throughout the years, whether it be, you know, a poor coach like Bill O'Brien or a poor quarterback like Matt, or a limiting factor in Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub did have a Pro Bowl year, led the league in passing. I can't say he's a poor quarterback, but he was a limiting factor.
He was a limiting factor in 2013.
Yes, sure. Yes. Well, and his Liz Frank was a limiting factor in 2011. Yeah. But Sean, you were asking the question like, well, if there is something this year that could limit them, like what would we say it is? I mean, there's some obvious things like left guard, second corner is a concern, but what are you most concerned about this year being a limiting factor?
To me, it's not just the left or the second corner spot. It's also just the question marks you have at safety Jimmy Ward and Jalen Petrie.
They obviously drafted Keith Bullock. I think it's Bullock.
Yeah, with Bullock, Petrie, and Ward. Ward, can he stay on the field? Petrie, can he kind of recreate some of what he did in his rookie year? And Bullock, just can he play NFL football? I don't know. And Lester, a little bit to a lesser degree. Maybe that's just me buying into seven minicamp practices where he was awesome, but
minicamp high.
Yeah, exactly.
I know we need sound effects for that.
I do think that we, Lasseter is now just being viewed as like, yep, gonna be an awesome.
You had Will Anderson hyping him up. We did the thing like, does it matter?
I just want to say it still is minicamp, and then so you. With that secondary, and then you look at their schedule, they play Josh Allen. They played Trevor Lawrence twice. The $275 million man. But they get Burrow. They get Love. They get
Mahomes.
Maybe Rodgers. They get Goff, who actually pretty good.
I forget. Is that game here or in Detroit? It's here, it's right? Here. It should be all right.
Sunday night game.
Goff's way better at home than he is on the road.
You get Dak. You get... not Tua, but you get Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Some of these, it's like...
So dismissive of Tua. Tua Non's going
to
be after
well,
you,
Well, it's
Sean,
tough to go prepared. To go with like all these guys, and then you have Tua, and then Pat Mahomes and Lamar Jackson.
Hey, Tua Non, those are the thoughts and opinions of at Sean A. Mace
okay
on Twitter. I do not want you coming after me and my mentions.
But it's specifically the matchups that they have with the quarterbacks on the schedule, pair that with what's the weakness of this team and specifically of this defense, the pass defense. And so there could be a lot of shootouts in their future, and you mess around, you lose enough of those games, now you're looking at either being in the wild card or maybe on the outside looking in of a wild card spot.
Now, I would say, Cam, that and Sean's point is certainly valid. It's a concern when you have, like, Derek Stingley, great. I think he's a Pro Bowl, possibly even All-Pro level corner.
Even Stingley, who I think is absolutely awesome, .. when he's on the field.
Right,
and
exactly.
So even Stingley, who I think is really good, I think he is – now made it to the point where you don't go, I can't believe they passed on Sauce Gardner to draft. Nope, he is good enough
on
the field.
In that conversation.
He just needs to be on the field.
But, Cam, I guess the follow-up to Sean's point is, I mean, they've invested heavily in the pass rush. Obviously, you set the third overall pick a year ago on Will Anderson. You spend money on Danico Autry and Danielle Hunter this offseason. And Danielle Hunter, we're not going to even have time to get to this, but the Pete Prisco's top 100 players in the NFL, Danielle Hunter was a top-rated Texan on that list. So I think you do have to you ready for the coach speak? Complimentary football? The complimentary football would tell you that, hey, if the pass rush is as good as we think, Cam, then maybe, not that it doesn't matter that your corner's a little weak, but maybe that can make up for some of some of what you're lacking there at the corner position.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And like to piggyback on Sean, I do think, I guess, safety is a little bit of a concern. But like you just said, they invested heavily in that D-line, and they got pass rushers. So even though they're playing a bunch of elite quarterbacks this year, they did what they had to do to apply pressure to those quarterbacks. And so I know that we haven't even played a preseason game and we're just going off of like the depth chart, but this team has too much talent for me to just see them pull back like past Texans in their history. Like I cannot see them regressing. Like I can't. And like Texans aren't even on my number one team, and it's just like I don't see how, unless they get hit by a ton of injuries, which my team is very familiar with, I don't see how that they take a step back.
Yeah, that is something to agree with B-Mac's kind of original point of this team doesn't have the absolute like worst case scenario basement that the 2005 Texans did, and that the 2013 Texans did. They don't have that, oh my God, if these things go wrong, they might be 2-4. Like, that is not happening. I think C.J. Stroud's too good. I think that offense is just, as a whole, too good. I'm saying as far as to poke a hole in this, where if we're sitting here in January and we're saying, how did the Texans miss the playoffs? That, to me, is right now where
you're losing shootouts.
Yeah, is where I'd put it at, where maybe they do go 9-8, and it's because they lose four games where they give up 35 points.
Yeah, so I mean, look, if I'm hearing what you're saying, Sean, with these shootouts, you're saying draft some Texans in fantasy football.
Yes.
I mean, Nico Collins, wide receiver one.
And guys on the Texans schedule.
Yes. And draft the guys on the schedule.
Draft some receivers. Because
I'm for it.
You guys.
Well, not for the losses, obviously, but I'm for the high scoring.
But you guys do bring up a point where it is clear that D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio decided, like, they're not dumb. They know that they left cornerback and at least one safety spot kind of as a question mark, but it's because they went out and invested in the front seven. So I do understand that, hey, if they don't have time to run past all these cornerbacks, maybe it's not that bad. You can put anyone at cornerback if you don't have time to throw. So I understand that. I do wonder, though, in games where the pass rush isn't getting there, that's when it gets really scary for the Texans.
Yeah, #complimentary football, Sean. We got to get all right. It's almost July, Sean. We got to get in all the coach speech. That's a Mount Rushmore plus
Joe
one.
Mixon's 3.6 yards per carry. You excited
3.6,
for that?
And yeah, you run.
Hey,
you
that's
run
my the fantasy ball, starter. Don't
first,
you run
on
him.
Second.
You run the ball four times at 3.6 per carry, you get a first down, Sean. Yeah. That's right. Move the chains, pal. All right, so I think we need a Mount Rushmore plus one in coach speech coming up for July.
Yeah,
that'll be coming up at 1:30. Yeah. Mount Rushmore plus one. But coming up next, again, your 13-1 SaberCats locked up a playoff spot. Got Dallas coming up. We're going to hear a couple of these SaberCats, Ezekiel Lindemuth and Ronan Murphy. They spoke with Jeremy Branham. That on the bullpen when we return on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.